Well, welcome all to another episode of Our Spiritual Life. It's going to be fun talking with my guest today, as it seems like it always is. I've interviewed so many interesting people and talked about so many ideas and lessons learned in life that can be applied to generally everyone in many cases. So today we're going to go down a different path, perhaps. Every one of my guests is a different path, I think. But my guest today is C.K. Collins. She also goes by Kelly, and she's an award-winning publisher, owned a news publishing company at one point in her life, actually probably for quite a while, and sold that in 2021. It sounds like she went through a difficult divorce and has been dealing with that and exploring new things in life ever since. But I'm going to let her tell us all about that rather than me reading any more information. Kelly, welcome today. How are you?
I'm good, Randy. Thank you. Very happy to be here.
Very good. Well, thank you. We're glad to have you. Kelly, go ahead and tell the audience about yourself, kind of your story of how you came to be the person you are, and where you're at today. I know you've got, I think it's a new book out, right? The Swipe Right Effect, and you talk about that. So, yeah. Let the audience know all about yourself, and then we'll dive into a conversation.
Okay, sounds great. I am, as you mentioned, I was in the news business for quite a while. I raised my family of three girls and was an at-home mom for 10 years. And so that was a great experience. And I was in sales and marketing early on in my career. And then as I was home with my children, I did a lot of freelance writing and just kind of, helped bring money in. And I had a lot of clients from all over the United States because we had moved 11 times with my husband's job. So it was easier for me to stay home with the kids than it was to keep trying to find a new job. I developed, this love of writing. I'd always loved it, but it was really great to be able to use it to make a living. Mm-hmm. And we ended up moving back to our hometown outside Nashville, Tennessee. And I started really doing less and less of the freelance as my children got older and they were busy and I'm running them all over creation in my taxi cab car. But a friend of mine from church, we went to Sunday school together for a long time and our kids were friends. And we were both looking for a job. I had decided I wanted to go back to work and kind of fill that part of me again. And we ended up starting a business together. And it was a news publishing business. She was the journalist and I was also a writer, but my background was marketing and sales. So most of my writing had been along that bent, but we had very complementary skill set. And so our business grew quickly. We did very well with their hometown newspaper. And then we started expanding and eventually got to four when she exited. I've added four more sites and then sold the company. I retired in 2021 and I decided to take a travel sabbatical and I traveled all over the world for a year. And while I was traveling, I came up with the idea for this book, which is basically a pay it forward book. As I went through 2017, I split with my husband and we've been married 30 years. It was 31 by the end of it. But all these people, all my friends, people I met all over the world really helped me through that tough time. And I interview them in the book about how they helped me. So it's a it's really a labor of love. It's, they call it a memoir in the book publishing world, but I feel like it's 11 people's mini memoirs.
Okay.
Because every chapter is a new friend and a piece of advice that they gave me. And we just talk about, you know, where I was when they gave me that piece of advice. And then I asked them to tell how they learned it. And so it's some really beautiful stories of recovery and redemption and finding your way back to love.
Okay. So when you say recovery and redemption, that was all from the divorce, or was it bigger than that?
Well, for me, it was recovery. I think in some of the other stories, there's redemption more so than mine. There's several, each chapter is really a topic. I mean, I said piece of advice, but it's also an overarching topic of, you know, self-love or vision for your future, anger, forgiveness. There's some dating stuff in there for post-divorce. But it's people sharing their stories in hopes that other people's lives might be redeemed. But there, one chapter is grief, and there are some really sad stories. There's three women in that one particular chapter who had some really tough stories. They lost their husbands. One lost her husband to cancer. One lost her husband to a terrible motorcycle accident, and one lost her child to suicide. So I think their stories are probably the closest thing to redemption. They're really beautiful, strong women.
So you said one thing in your introduction that, and was that the book can be viewed as a self-improvement book?
Yeah, I really think so. In the very beginning, in the preface, I tried to make it clear what I believe is that we have a choice. And, you know, whether you're religious or not religious, I think it's somewhat easy to see that you have to make a choice if you're going to move from where you're standing. You know, if you're stuck, you're going to stay stuck unless you make a choice. And so we all told our stories to try to help people get unstuck. And that really wasn't the original subtitle of the book at all. It wasn't even close to that. But every person, with the exception of one, so 9 out of 10 people said they were stuck. And they said, and it wasn't in a specific question I asked, it was just a recognition of we all do get stuck. And when I saw that theme in the interviews, I really started thinking I need to do more than just tell the story. And so each chapter also has an empowerment practice. And, so, you know, it kind of starts off important but small, like a vision board. And the empowerment practices get a little more deep and intentional. And, you know, it's walking meditations and forgiveness practices. I mean, not super easy things to do. But I mean, if one of those things is what you need to turn your life around, maybe that, you know, I hope those empowerment practices help people move on. So it's a good mix of storytelling and, but then also practices that can help you maybe just snap out of your stuckness.
Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. So yeah, I always like, yeah, to explore this with people, to find out, you know, how much of their story they want to dive into. So, but yeah, I hear you saying you're talking primarily about the book, but I know we're going to get into some of your story, at least over the past 5 years or so, because you've been doing some interesting things there. But let's back up just a moment. So the name of the book is The Swipe Right Effect. Is that correct? Tell us about what that means. I'm not a big social media person. I don't use a dating app, but I'm happily married. But,
yeah, I saw that wedding ring. But so you don't need that dating app, thank goodness, right?
Right. Tell us
well,
what
you know. It is an interesting.
Is. Yeah.
It's an interesting world to walk into. Well, I mean, I had been with my husband since I was 19. You know, I married when I was 21, so I was 52 when we split, and it was such a shock to even ever. I never dreamed that we would be apart. I never dreamed I'd be dating, and so it was definitely some adjustment that needed to be made. So, I believe I jumped into dating too soon. And so that's one of the things that I really want people to understand is, well, and let me back up a little bit. In a dating app, just like on social media sometimes, if you like something, if you choose that person, that you're looking at a picture, and if you choose the person, you swipe right. If you don't want to choose the person, you swipe left.
Wow.
Not every dating app is like that, but a lot of them are. And it is like that on social media too. You double tap something, or there's always a way to like something. Facebook all, you know, got us all doing that. But what I say in the preface is I'm suggesting that you choose yourself, that you swipe right for yourself. And the effect that that has is you become who you want to date. So you start working on yourself, and you deal with your anger, you deal with your frustrations, your forgiveness. You need to fall in love with yourself before you go fall in love with somebody else. And so it's really about swiping right for yourself. And the effect is you end up being so much more dateable because you are a happy individual. You're a self-confident, self-loving individual that is actually ready for what they want. And you can name what you want. You know where you want to be, who you want to be with, and what you want that to look like because you've done your work.
Okay, yeah. So you're actually saying, well, I was going to say, it means to love yourself. But it's more than that, I hear you saying now. It's to choose yourself, choose the best for yourself. Is that right?
Choose yourself first. And then all of that, if you choose yourself and you walk down the path of, you know, really, I mean, sometimes it's taking acceptance for your part in something that happened. Sometimes it's forgiving yourself rather than forgiving other people. I had to do both. I had to forgive him and I had to forgive myself because I let myself stay in a very unhealthy situation for 6 years and I was being gaslighted. And so I just kept fighting and fighting and fighting, and I didn't ever take a step back to say, wait a minute, I need to take care of myself. And I just kept trying to save my marriage, which I believe, you know, you are supposed to do. And I know I fought as hard as I could have, but I eventually had to choose myself.
Very good. Well, you look very happy. I'm glad you did.
I'm so happy.
Good. There's a kind of a message to your book, and then the stories that you tell about your different friends, does it always come back to that message for them as well, to swipe right for themselves?
Yeah, it does. And they give instances on how they got back to a place where they could love themselves. You know, there's a story of a friend, I'm trying to remember her name in the book, Faith. Her name is Faith in the book. Everybody's anonymous in the book. So I have their real name and their country music star name because I'm from Nashville. So they all have country music star names. We got Dolly and Loretta and Shania, and it's pretty funny. So just a little levity and with all the self-work that you get to do. So Faith tells her story about she had a husband who had decided he didn't want to be married anymore. He actually wanted an open marriage. And she did not want that. She fully believes in monogamy and it's important to her. And so she just, you know, after putting up with a lot of heartache, she finally just was able to look herself in the mirror and say, you are enough. And I think if we could all do that, if we could all look in the mirror and say, you are enough and I love you, you know, even if nobody else out there loves you, you love yourself. And I think that, you know, if you look at law of attraction and you look at that whole theory of what you put out into the world comes back to you, right? And mm-hmm. and you, if you say I love you to yourself every day, I can see where that would make you shine and be full of joy to where you would be attractive to someone who's also looking to be in love. So loving yourself is actually the act of attracting love to yourself.
Yes, absolutely. Very good. Yes. So in that process of not just recovering from the divorce, but just choose the process of choosing yourself over the last however many years it's been. Sounds like you've gone through an interesting process besides the writing the book, which is something big in itself. Tell us a little bit about what you went through. I mean, was it all focused on your friends, or how much of it was focused on you, your own story?
Yeah, well, the book, I'm very open about what happened to me in the book, to the point that's why I made everybody anonymous, because I wanted to be able to be as honest as I could. I would be able to help as many people if I didn't talk about my pain and make myself vulnerable. I understand to a deep degree how much courage it takes to be honest about the painful parts of your past. And my story ended with, you know, I was betrayed. There was infidelity on the other side, and it was a long-term infidelity. And one of the first things I did was listen to two friends. And one of them suggested that I go hike the Camino de Santiago. And this is a 500-mile hike in Spain. It's a spiritual pilgrimage. And he had done two of them. And he's a very, very dear friend of both me and my ex-husband. He was my ex-husband's best friend since like junior year in high school. And so we were all very close. He was best man in our wedding. And, you know, he had been a big part of holding me up once everything came out, which was in a very dramatic fashion. It was not fun. And, but he was there as a sounding board, you know, and he was brilliant. He was able to stay my husband's friend and stay my friend and help us both through this really tough time. Because we just really loved each other. We were such good friends. And he had hiked two Caminos, and he said, I really think you need this. I was already a big runner. I ran half marathons. I love to train. I love to have a goal to achieve. And so I knew physically I could do it. And it was just like, but do I walk away from my business for 6 or 7 weeks? Is the business going to survive me being gone? Will everybody just stop working and take a vacation? You know, what will happen? And then there was this one day where after a conversation with him, I was sitting there watching. He asked me to watch the movie called The Way. It's by Emilio Estevez and stars Martin Sheen. And it's completely about the Camino. And I watched that, and at the end of the movie, I was like, I have got to talk to Crystal, because she had done something like that, not in Spain, but in Scotland. And I got up to turn off the television, and my phone rang, and it was her, like 5 seconds max.
Wow.
And I said, oh my gosh, you are not going to believe this. I just said out loud to no one in my house that I need to talk to Crystal, and you call me. And she said, you know, of course, God is good. You know, and I was like, oh, all right. Yeah, I'll take that. And then, so we decided to meet that afternoon to talk everything out. And I'm sitting here thinking, I think I'm supposed to go. And I go to the office and pick up a devotional book called Jesus Calling. And I had not picked up that book in 2 years. I had not been going to church. I had that was part of me trying to save my marriage. He said, I spent too much time at church, so I stopped going to church. And I picked up that book and I opened, it's by the day, and it was December 9th, 2017. And I start reading and it's, you are playing it safe. You need to go on this path and you're not going to be alone on this path. I will walk this path with you. And I was like, okay, I get it. And okay. I called my husband and I said, I'm going on the Camino. And he said, okay. So I had 3.5 months to really 4 months to get my business ready. And that was also a really freeing, valuable experience because it just got to be like, can you change this on the website? Can you do that? And every time I had to say no, I'm not going to do it, but I'm going to show you how. And because you're going to have to do it while I'm gone. And I was upfront with everybody. I told them where I was going. I told them why I was going. And that, you know, that was also the beginning of me trusting my intuition again. Because I had stop. My intuition was saying something was really, really wrong. And I was being told that, no, everything's just fine. It's just your imagination. And so I had to, you know, I knew I was going to have to rebuild that part of my soul again. And so that first decision to go on the Camino was the beginning of that as well.
I know that the Camino is a whole network of trails. The one that you took, did I hear you say it was 500 miles?
Yeah, there's 28 different routes, Camino routes in Spain, Portugal, France. They're, you know, they kind of vary. But the most popular one is called the Camino Francais, and it's called the French Way because it starts in the French Pyrenees, in this tiny, beautiful little town called Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port. And so you start off in France, you go up and over the Pyrenees. When you kind of go over the top, you're in Navarra, Spain. And so, and then you basically hike all the way to Santiago from there.
Wow. And 500 miles. Yeah. I was thinking about that and thinking, well, how many, well, I don't know how often or how frequent the hostels are along the way, but you know, how far you can walk in a day and where the hostels are would determine, yeah, you know, what you could do in a day. So it could,
exactly.
Yeah. It could be, you know, up to 2 months to do all that.
Yeah. There's kind of the Camino Bible that John Brierley is the author of, and he has it laid out for 30 to 31 days. I did it in 38 days, two time, but really 36 walking because I stayed an extra day in Pamplona, just because I didn't know if I'd ever go to Pamplona again, and it's cool and I want to see it. And then I did an extra day in Lyon because I was sick and I had to go to the emergency room and get some medicine. But it was, yeah, basically 36 days straight of walking. And you do anywhere from 8 miles to 20. It really just depends on whether you want to finish it in that 30 days or not. And I had taken 7 weeks off, so I wanted to finish it in 6 weeks, and I wanted to have a week to think about the process and the experience because I knew I was coming home to a divorce, and I knew I was coming home to selling the house. In fact, the house sold while I was on the Camino.
Wow.
On our 31st anniversary.
Right. So, but I know that, at least I've never done that myself. And, but I think I've seen, a documentary, one time about Camino, and, at least some part of that network of trails was originally a pilgrimage, right?
Yeah.
People coming from Spain into.
Right. So Camino means the way, and Santiago is St. James. And so it's like the way of St. James, and it's all the routes that St. James walked to spread Christianity, because it was occupied by the Moors when he started doing these pilgrimages. And then later it became, so he died and they put his remains in Santiago, and they built a cathedral for St. James. And so the pilgrimage became wherever you were. That's why there's so many different routes too. And but the original route started in Puy, France, and it's 1,000 kilometers. So I'm not sure how many miles that is, probably 800. And so there, you know, you can actually do a much longer walk, but the point is the pilgrimage to visit St. James Remains. Now, 250,000 people a year do just the Camino Francés route. And of course that shut down in 2020 and 21, but now it's back up and going again. And so those hostels really play an integral part because, you know, between flying over there and back,
right,
all my meals, everything, you know, for an entire month of travel, it was like $3,000. So it's very inexpensive to stay in the hostels. You have to have actually like this little passport that is your pilgrim credentials, and you can't stay at the hostels unless you have that, unless you're on a pilgrimage. Yeah. And so they keep it very inexpensive. Most of the hostel owners have walked multiple pilgrimages and fell so in love with it that they've gone back to Spain. They're from all over the world.
Oh, wow.
They go back to Spain and start a hostel.
Well, very interesting. Well, but let's back up just a little bit here, because I know that so you just described how it was originally used by pilgrims going to Santiago, if I understood it correctly, but I know nowadays many people approach going on the Camino as a pilgrimage, regardless kind of where they're going, but as a pilgrimage, a spiritual process. Now, did you find that to be the case for you?
Yes, as I've tried to describe, I hope I've done a decent job. I was pretty lost. You know, my kids were grown. My marriage was over. I knew I was going to have to sell the business. I was like, who am I going to be when all this is said and done? And so I would say, you know, because people ask you, why are you here?
Mm-hmm.
And I just stumbled all over myself when I first got there. But as John Brierley says in his book, which I can't remember the exact name, but it's called Camino de Santiago, A Guide, or something like that.
Okay.
And he says, you come to the Camino with a question. Even if you just go there for the physical challenge, you have an underlying question that you're going to get the answer to while you're there. It's a very magical place. I mean, I don't know if this is myth or legend, but the city that you walk into is actually Santiago de Compostela. And Compostela is the piece of paper you get when you get there. But Compostela also means field of stars. And the path of the Camino Francés follows the Milky Way.
Hmm.
And so a lot of people believe the energy because of that between the earth and the stars. I felt like multiple times that I was feeling the presence of people who had gone before me.
Hmm.
I was feeling them walking with me. And I had felt so alone because I wasn't telling people what was going on in my marriage. I wasn't telling, you know, I was just pushing through, trying to fix it. I can do this. I can do this. And so when I got there and I'm by myself and I have nothing to do but work on myself, I started just feeling this whole other support system in the universe, but also people that become your Camino family. And I think I was actually writing about that this morning, how open everybody is there. It's just, I don't know. It's very magical. It's magical. And I think people just innately all of a sudden have the ability to make space for the other people with them. And, you know, once people made space for me to tell my story, which was ugly story, you know, having been gaslighted for 6 years and was still in love with my husband and had been fighting for, you know, it's sad. No, you know, and people would make space for me to tell that story. And they gave me that example. So as I was meeting people, I could turn and make space for people. And what I started learning was every time I made space for someone, I learned something so valuable, something so important. And all I was doing was listening. All I was doing was making a safe place for them to share their story. And I had people say the same thing for me. Thank you for sharing your story. That really helped me reframe my situation back home. Or, you know, my sister went through that. Now I kind of have a way I can talk to her about it because she never would talk to me about it, but now I understand what she was going through. You know, you just never know. If you're vulnerable and you have the courage to tell your story, you never know how you're going to help someone.
Yeah. You know, that's incredible. And I was thinking actually, you know, before when you were talking a little bit about your book and the stories that are in there, and being vulnerable, you know, I would say most people, and I don't know what a percentage would be, and it might be 99% of people really are to some degree closed down. Mm-hmm. They don't open themselves up. They don't open themselves up for lots of different reasons. You know, that's an unfortunate way to live. I mean, really,
yeah.
You know, and we're talking about a kind of a universal issue here with how people live and how people are in the world. And, you know, in my shows, we focus on spirituality, and so we can look at the spiritual side of it. But just in general, I think there are so many things that if we could, we would change in how we live. And so you're talking about some experiences that I've kind of heard some of this, I think, in that documentary before about how people were so greatly affected by doing that Camino walk, mm-hmm. that it was just an experience that went far beyond the walking and meeting people, but a kind of different way of being with people.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know why it's so inspiring to open up, but it is. And I think there's a quote, but he says, there's just something about walking along a path with another person and you know they're there for the same reasons. You know they're there to walk 500 miles. You know they're there to work on something. And he said, I would have, you know, a half day or all day conversation with someone while walking, never to see them again, and have more deep and meaningful conversation than I did with my friend back home for over a year. Because, that's that space that people are making space for each other. And I guess, yeah, this is what I was writing about this morning. I think sometimes it's easier to tell your story to a complete stranger than it is to somebody who knows you, knows your past, knows, you know, who you are and the mistakes you've made and all the things you did right, and knows you as a mother or a daughter, you know, and when somebody's meeting you on the path, they don't know you. They don't know your mistakes. They just know what's in front of them right there. So I think it's easier to talk to a stranger in some way. At least on this pilgrimage it is, but I'm finding it as I'm going out and talking to people about the book, they're opening up to me about, you know, I didn't see myself as stuck, but now I recognize that I was hanging on to some anger from my previous marriage, or I thought I was over the grief of having lost my husband, but I'm realizing I'm kind of mad at him, you know, I mean, like I'm mad at him that he left me. And so I feel like I'm on a different type of Camino now, because I was so open about the things that happened to me. I feel like people are feeling safe with me and they're able to talk to me about their pain. And I want more of that. I mean, my word for the year is gather. I just want to keep gathering. I want to keep talking about these things because I think when you share, it takes the scariness off of it. It takes the momentum out of that pain. It takes, it can take the pain away, you know, it, just by sharing.
So when you came back from that walk, did you feel that you had answered a lot of those questions in your mind, that you knew what you wanted to do at that point and how you were going to move forward?
Well, the big thing was when I left, I was thinking I probably will have to sell the business because I did not want it to get caught up in the divorce. I thought it would kill it, you know, just to financially tear it apart. And so I thought to save it and to save myself because I loved that business. I worked really hard on it. So if I sold it, I would be able to work on myself. And so that big decision was made. It was like, I remember I had hiked to the highest point of the Camino that day. And I was just like, I know now. I mean, like I just had this moment of relief that I knew I wanted to sell the business. And so that was about the halfway point. And so the whole rest of the time, then I could concentrate on, okay, what does that look like to me? How much money, I did a vision board for what I wanted my new life. I did it just with words on my phone, on my iPhone and my notes app. I just started listing words that would help me envision my future. I wrote down how much I wanted for the company. I was trying to manifest, but I didn't even know the word manifest until a few weeks after that. And but that's what I was doing. And I prayed over it and I tried to manifest it. And I did whatever I could to jumpstart my new life. That was kind of my line when somebody would say, why are you here? And I was like, I'm hitting the easy button on starting over my life. But yeah, I'm just starting over and this is the beginning, is this walk. And I mean, and it was a beautiful beginning because I mean, it still took me several years to release the pain, release the anger, get to a place of true forgiveness to where I could literally feel it, you know, that it was gone.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think forgiveness is, it comes in waves and where it, and sometimes they're longer waves, it's gone and you're not feeling any pain. And then all of a sudden it washes over you again with some kind of situational trigger. And, it's hard. It's such hard work. But my friend Kay gave me, a 3-step process in a book by Lewis Smeads called The Art of Forgiving. And I ended up laying it out like that in the book because with full credit to him. But it was, these 3 steps are actually what had happened. But it was difficult to find a way to describe it because it was so come and go. And one of the lines I remember when I wrote it, I just went, wow, where did that come from? But I was like, forgiveness is like a high school or like your bully in elementary school. It just keeps coming back around when you don't want it to. And, but instead of wanting your lunch money, it wants your soul. But I mean, that's how I feel like that act of forgiveness is kind of a bully. And if you don't really get it done, it just keeps coming back to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's law of attraction. If you don't get rid of that bad energy is coming back. It is like a bully.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that. I don't know that I've ever had anything so big in my life to deal with that, that it took a long time to forgive, but I can easily understand that, we just the way we suppress emotions and over long periods of time that we have that stuff all buried in layers. So
yeah.
We have to work through all those layers, right?
You sure do. Yeah. And it's important. And I know everybody has to deal with it in their own time. I just really wanted to give people action items or, maybe this is a catalyst that will help them start healing from whatever it is that's got them stuck. Not everybody is stuck, but at this very moment, but everybody's been stuck at some point in their life. You know, you lose your job, you're immediately stuck. You got a big decision. You got about 10 decisions to make in 5 minutes, unless you got a big severance or something. But I mean, job loss, death in the family, divorce. I mean, there's, you know, change of financial situation, change in your health. There's so many things that happen that get you stuck. I mean, and I think that's, you know, yes, I talk about my divorce and all of the effects it had on me, but I really wanted to talk about a lot of different situations and a lot of different ways people are stuck, because I think it just comes so much worse now with COVID and everybody being so isolated. I think a lot more people became stuck during that time.
Yeah. And I think you're right. Help. I, you know, I've read so many stories and perspectives that the COVID and being isolated, you know, it had some good effects, but it had some really negative effects on people as well, that people were still dealing with.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I see it in my own family, the effects, the anxiety and the worrying about people. And it was just, yeah, it was a tough time. I mean, that was during that time is when I decided I needed to get out of the news business, that this was not a happy place for me anymore. And I decided that, you know, I decided I wanted to travel. And once it opened up, that was when, you know, I made some pretty forward-thinking decisions in that I, you know, when I decided that I was trapped in my old life, you know, I still was in the same hometown. I still was a homeowner. It was like the same middle-class life in the news business. And it was just, it just felt stuck. And so I did something very radical. I sold my house and I gave away all my stuff. And, and that's when I did the travel sabbatical for a year.
Wow.
So now I'm a free bird.
Yeah. In your biography that I read, you made a statement that I thought was an impressive statement. You said that believing that travel feeds the soul and grows the heart and mind, that's what triggered you to take that sabbatical and do that traveling. And, you know, I think that's can be true in many ways,
mm-hmm.
but I think, as you've described, the Camino was something that's very special and not just any other ordinary travel.
Right. The Camino taught me that the, you know, the travel can feed the soul and that your heart and mind can open. I learned that on the Camino. In fact, I hiked the second Camino in that travel sabbatical. I did the Portuguese Camino, which was, it was 14 days. It was a little bit, it was 180 miles.
Wow.
So I believe in it. And in fact, my next book is going to be called The Traveling Effect. And it's going to be about that year of solo travel and the experiences I had. And hopefully I'll get to go back and interview some of the people I met along the way.
So you've given us some good context here. So the question I wanted to ask is, you know, how much more self-aware do you think you've become since you embarked on that?
Oh, wow. Great question. I think I'm very self-aware. In fact, I went to therapy when I came back for about a year. And my counselor said, because I came back and I was telling her something that happened on a date and she was like, wow. I was like, what? She goes, I think you graduated from therapy. She says, you're like, you're giving this guy good therapy advice on your date.
Yeah. Well,
and I think I'm almost hyper self-aware, you know, and sometimes I'd like to turn it off. but I think that, you know, if I was, especially in those 6 years, you know, if my mind would just start spinning, I call it the spins. I've heard other people use that term, but just that negative thought and it just spinning. Now I know how to turn it off. You know, if and when it does happen, I'm just like, no, that is somebody else's story. That's not my story. I also used to never read self-help books. And now I've got 5 sitting on my bedside table. I have 2 sitting here on the table with me, and I've written one.
Okay.
I'm fascinated with the world in a whole new way. You know, just really seeking that deeper connection, that spirituality. And there's so many, it's so interesting. There's even so many different ways to meditate even, you know.
Right.
And I want to learn it all because it's all helping me get even happier and more fulfilled and stay there, you know, really stay there.
Yeah. Well, that's great. You know, the thing I've discovered is that awareness is probably the most important thing that we can learn. Mm-hmm. And that's, it tends to be most important in self-awareness, awareness of ourself and what's really going on with us deep down. But awareness of the world around us is important too. But awareness, when you really put your attention on something and focus, you shut down that chattering mind.
Right.
So it, you know, it serves multiple purposes. But
and you focus on something positive instead of something negative, and it can be that simple, but it takes work. It takes awareness. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Big deal. It's actually a really big deal.
All right. Well, we're beginning to get short on time here. So let me ask, in your book, you have the 10 stories. Did I understand that correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Was there anything, you mentioned one or two points, but is there anything else that you'd like to share that was really important? Lesson that was learned that came out in the book?
I think some of the most poignant content in my book is about forgiveness. And there's some fun chapters about online, you know, dating. But I think that it's all about the choice. It's all about your choice. And your choice is so powerful. Like, just, I want people to understand, I'm on a mission. I want them to understand the power that they have in making a choice. You make a choice and you make a move, then you're changing your life forever. You know, if you can just have that awareness, like you said, the awareness of the negative things that are going on that are causing you to be stuck, and you make that choice, I'm not going to be stuck anymore. I'm going to make a vision board. I'm going to look in the mirror and say, I love you. I'm going to forgive my ex-husband. I'm going to forgive myself. I'm going to forgive myself. And so these are all choices that you make. And I want people to feel empowered to have a happy life. There's just so much joy out there to be had. Dream it for yourself.
Very good. I agree. One of the other questions I wanted to ask is you talked about some things that you quit doing in order to find happiness, not just things, new things to do, but things to quit doing. Tell us about that.
Well, I love talking about quitting. first thing I did was quit a toxic relationship. And I think we see far too often that people will let themselves be bullied or gaslighted, or they're living with a narcissist and you don't know how to get out. And usually it's because you love the person, but the way out is, you know, to quit putting up with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, and then I quit my self-doubt. I touched on that a little bit earlier. The gaslighting had really left me not understanding what decision was right and what, it was so hard to follow my intuition because I'd been told it was wrong for so long.
Mm.
I quit my old life. I think a lot of people get divorced and stay right where they are,
uh-huh.
and they don't make a move to another town, you know, even if it's just the next town over, or change how you're living. Don't live in a master plan community like you have the last 30 years of your marriage. Go live in a townhome or an apartment. Shake it up. Do something completely different. I didn't see it until I'd already bought my house and I'd been living there for about a year. And I'm like, the same photo album, the same vase and the same dishes and the same couch. It's like, why am I living my old life? So I quit my old life.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Kelly, this has been fun chatting with you about this. I've loved your whole story. You know, I love what happened for you on the Camino and just the whole process that you've gone through and changing yourself and finding new things that you want to prioritize in your life and make different. Yeah. I think that's important lessons for all of us. By the way, you had said something early in the program that I wanted to mention. And you know, I think it was when you were talking about the chapters in your book, but you were talking about from the woman's perspective, you know, and women, I think, have lots of reason to be unhappy with things in their life. And sometimes it's men's fault. But some of the things that you were actually saying, I wanted to interject. Well, that can imply to men too, that they may have things that they need to change, just like
Definitely.
Women need to change.
Yeah. In fact, I believe that wholeheartedly. I'm actually going to change the cover of my book because my daughters, I've made it pink, and I half of my beta readers, which is just people you have read your book kind of while you're writing it, were men, because first of all, I wanted to make sure there was no, you know, hating on men, or that I wasn't phrasing something that made it seem like I don't love men. I love men. You know, my dad, my brother are men. I love them. In fact, it's been brought up multiple times that if you just remove the pronouns and you were to put men's names in there, these stories could be men's stories. You know, men get cheated on. Men are unhappy. Men get stuck. And I've had multiple men say, well, you do a swipe right effect for men. and I was like, I don't think I need to. I think the advice stays the same. Now, if you want me to have a blue cover and change some pronouns, I can do that. But the lessons are the same. The lessons to get unstuck are the same. But I am changing my book cover simply because I believe that. I believe that the men can learn, you
Very
know,
good.
Just as much. Yeah.
Very good. Well, we are out of time. Any final words you'd like to say to the listeners? And then be sure to give them your website or sites.
Okay. Well, I do have a free tip sheet for anybody who wants to kind of just see if they're stuck or they're just questioning whether they are or not after listening to all of this. And it's called 10 Ways to Get Unstuck. And that is 10waystogetunstuck.com. That's where you can download it for free. My website is ckcollins.co. And there's a lot of references there. There's a tab called references, and all of the books that I talk about in my book, The Swipe Right Effect, The Power to Get Unstuck, all of the references are on a page on my website. So the Michael A. Singer book, Brené Brown's books, everybody that I, Catherine Woodward Thomas, The Calling in the One, all of these books help me. And I know they can help other people. So even if you don't read my book, you know, go and look at those resources. And there's other, I mean, in fact, if you want to read chapter one for free and see if it's something you're interested in, I have that option on my homepage. So there's plenty of resources out there. Don't stay stuck.
All right.
Don't get happy.
Very good. Well, Kelly, thank you for being on the show today. This has been interesting. It's been fun. I'm glad you were here. And thank you for sharing all that you did with the listeners. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I really am honored that you have me on. I appreciate it.
Very good. Well, to you and to my listeners, have a great day and a great life.